To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is Aaron Carnes, the host of this podcast. After 4.5 years of weekly episodes, we are ready to stop creating In Defense of Ska. The podcast was meant to be a promotional push for my book In Defense of Ska, and it wound up taking on a life of its own. While Adam and I both love what we've accomplished with this podcast, we both feel compelled to focus our creative output elsewhere. The episodes we recorded remain evergreen, and we invite you to explore our back catalog, which will remain online thanks to the Consequence Podcast Network. I am working diligently on a new book, a novel called Little Black Book of Death. It's not ska-related, but it has a strong musical component. I also have a punk-themed script in the works. Adam is working on new music for Omnigon. We invite you to follow our respective projects and look forward to what the future holds. To keep in touch with my writing, follow me on Substack. That's aaroncarnes.substack.com. You can follow Omnigon on their social media accounts. Thank you.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is Aaron Carnes, the host of this podcast. After 4.5 years of weekly episodes, we are ready to stop creating In Defense of Ska. The podcast was meant to be a promotional push for my book In Defense of Ska, and it wound up taking on a life of its own. While Adam and I both love what we've accomplished with this podcast, we both feel compelled to focus our creative output elsewhere. The episodes we recorded remain evergreen, and we invite you to explore our back catalog, which will remain online thanks to the Consequence Podcast Network. I am working diligently on a new book, a novel called Little Black Book of Death. It's not ska-related, but it has a strong musical component. I also have a punk-themed script in the works. Adam is working on new music for Omnigon. We invite you to follow our respective projects and look forward to what the future holds. To keep in touch with my writing, follow me on Substack. That's aaroncarnes.substack.com. You can follow Omnigon on their social media accounts. Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves to be analyzed, dissected, and have all its intricate stories told, just like other genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore. I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, longtime ska musician from such bands as Link 80 and Omnigon. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in an expanded second edition.
Today we have the honor of talking to comedian Felipe Esparza, a big ska fan and friend of Voodoo Gold Skulls. Do you have any early experience with Felipe's comedy?
I don't think I recognize him.
I used to watch Last Comic Standing, and he won that year in like 2010, which is strange to me because I remember when I was watching the show in the early years, it never felt like these were comedians that were going to have like big careers necessarily. Not that they were bad, but a lot of them actually have had pretty big careers. It's just interesting to see years later, and he's definitely one of those people. And funny enough, he was he was booked to play the San Jose Civic.
Wow.
Which is a huge venue for a comedian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since I am the editor of the calendar at Metro, I got a photo for a blurb for Felipe, and then I just threw out an offer for him to be on this podcast, and I got a yes.
Wow. So since I'm a little bit outside the loop on Felipe, why don't you fill everybody in about Felipe?
Okay, well, so he was born in Mexico, but he came to Boyle Heights in Southern California when he was young. He's been doing comedy a long time. He was really big in the LA scene for a good number of years. But then, like I said before, Last Comic Standing in 2010, that was sort of his big break. After that, he started recording specials and playing bigger and bigger venues. But that first special, They're Not Going to Laugh at You, which was recorded shortly after Last Comic Standing, he took a reworking of Voodoo Gold Skull's song Fat Randy as the opening and closing song for that.
Good choice.
So clearly ska is in his blood.
Yes. Well, now let's talk to Felipe.
I think a good place to start would be your podcast theme song. You have a version of Fat Randy right at the beginning of your podcast, but it's been like re-recorded. I guess the vocals have been re-recorded.
Yeah, the vocals were re-recorded with me.
Yeah.
we shot it at the studio at the I think it's Eddie's studio from Voodoo Gold Skulls, lead guitarist.
Yeah.
I don't know if they recorded the whole song, but I know that the vocals I threw in there.
Yeah.
I went one day and I just started shooting them out. What's up, fool? To replace Fat Randy. Should have Fat Randy was an actual guy? He got mad at that song?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He went to school with them.
But you know.
Yeah.
Oh, cool, man. You got to know what's up.
I think he was like a Polish guy, and the only thing I know about the story of Fat Randy is that the line Fat Randy shit on my couch, I think that line was taken from a real story that happened to one of the horn players.
Oh wow. He's big, fat, ugly, and mean.
Is there a reason why you chose Fat Randy for the song to re-record? Is that like a particularly favorite song of yours?
Oh, cause that's the one we like. We heard it. That's the one I like. When I first met my co-host, Rodrigo Torres, I never heard of Voodoo Gold Skulls, so I met him because he was wearing all the merch. Mm-hmm. He had every shirt from every concert that ever made.
Yeah.
He used to work at the record store with George and when they had a record store in Riverside. So we got to hang out with a band. We saw him live like four times at the Troubadour. And over there at some club in Pomona and Riverside, we saw him. Then we went to a big concert and we saw him again, and we ended up being friends with him.
Nice.
And we still always go hang out with Jerry. Would always hang out with us at the shows because he was like a big fan. Their original drummer, Jerry.
Jerry O'Neill. Yeah.
Crazy guy. You know, his girlfriend broke his finger one time, so he won't go on tour.
I don't know this story. Do you know this story, Adam?
No.
Yeah, man. He broke his finger was broken. He couldn't go on tour. And I think his lady, she broke his finger. But that motherfucker played with one hand like a G.
When Voodoo was between singers, did you think about auditioning as vocalist, Felipe?
Oh, man, you know what? The thought never came to my mind, but maybe I should have. But it'll be hard. I don't know all the songs. Unless they need somebody just for chorus.
Maybe you could still audition and be like second singer.
Yeah. One time we were hanging out at the Glendale Galleria, and we ran into Tim from Rancid. I think that's his name, right? Timothy from Rancid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I said, "What's up?" And he was like, he told me, "What's up?" And he said he knew my comedy. Mm. And I remember I said that, this guy right here, man, he's out with Voodoo Glow School. That's his crew. And I didn't know that they had beef at that time.
This
but we were instigating stuff.
This is for Rodrigo?
Yeah, Rodrigo. And he later on, he goes, "How come he looked at us weird?" "Oh, man, those guys had beef with Voodoo for a while, but not anymore." You just threw him off with that.
So, yeah, I actually talked to Eddie 2 days ago to kind of prepare for the interview. And he told me that, yeah, Rodrigo was like really like he worked for Cheap Guy Records for like 5 years, and he worked with the band quite a bit. He grew up with the band. And then I guess he moved to L.A. to do comedy. And that's when you and Rodrigo met each other, like kind of in the open mic scene.
Yeah.
You guys were still just kind of like entry level or small, kind of at the small level at that point, right?
Yes, I was the only one that had a TV credit at the time. And I was the one that I was like locally known in everywhere, like San Jose and any town with an S-A-N in the beginning of it, I was known. Like if your name started with a saint, you probably heard of my stand up back then. San Jose, San Luis Obispo, Santa Cruz.
What was your early TV credit that you had at the time?
Oh man, in 1996, I was lucky enough to do a show called Latino Laugh Festival.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was hosted by Paul Rodriguez, and I met all the greats later on at that show, like Greg Giraldo, a young Greg Giraldo. I met him at that show. And there's a lot of comedians that are not around who are like fell off, but they are like John Mendoza. He was probably the big comic then. Well, nobody really recognized him, and I was wondering why. But he was more like a crossover. He had a sitcom too, but it bombed. Then it made like 5 episodes, and they got rid of it. And he was half Irish and half Mexican or Puerto Rican. But this guy was deadpan, bro. Like Steven Wright, Mitch Hedberg style. Like, he'll have a joke like, he goes, "You ever seen two ugly people together?" And he goes, "My friend's ugly." He goes, "My friend's ugly." He goes, "Ugly people never know they're ugly. My friend's ugly." He goes, "He saw an ugly girl." He goes, "Oh, look at that pig." He goes, "You should go talk to her and say hello. Just don't have babies." He had a joke about women use so many contraceptives, and it always surprises me. You know, one time I was with a woman, and she had the vaginal foam. But by the time I realized it, I looked like a mad dog. But yeah, man, that guy had a sitcom at one time in the early, late 80s, early 90s, and he was there. But I was like a big comedy nerd, so I recognized everyone.
Yeah.
That was my first big break. And, man, that show, I got to do it 3 more times. And then they were all recorded for Showtime. The producer of the whole thing was Jeff Valdez. Jeff Valdez later on made a deal with a company owned by CBS. And he got our show to be on CBS. Channel 2 over here in Los Angeles, to air at 3 a.m, bro. So when that deal went through, a lot of comics found out about it. We hit up SAG-AFTRA, and we got paid, man. We got paid for those shows that were on CBS. So it was a good deal back then, 96, because here we are, 2000, in the year 2000, and we got paid 4 years later for it again. I think we made more money. I made more money the second time it aired than the first time.
Oh, yeah. Those were the pre-streaming days, yeah.
Yeah, because it was on Showtime, and they were paying basic AFTRA. Pay was worth $800 mm-hmm. for back then. And it's still $800, by the way. It hasn't changed.
Not with
Inflation or anything? Dang.
No, that's not even. I think it's still the same, bro. Or it might have dropped. Because I remember, I meet old actors and they tell me, no, bro, to be a guest star on a show, you used to pay $7,000. And I said, damn. Because I didn't get none of that. Not even half to say hello.
I remember I read an article a little while ago that said that, you know, because of syndication, that people that were small actors in Friends or something like that, like are millionaires because of syndication pay and stuff like that, which is just crazy.
Yeah, man. Now, when you do a deal now, and I only know this because I've gotten, I got it to the point where you're going to get a deal, but then they say no when they read the script. They say no to the pilot. But now, before you would sign up to do a sitcom, and that's it, like Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David, they just signed on for a sitcom, and so did George and Elaine. They just signed on to do a sitcom. That was back then. But after they got their deal, after Seinfeld ended for syndication, they changed everything. And now when you do your sitcom contract, they throw in the syndication contract right afterwards. Like not, even if it doesn't go to 100, because they want to make sure they don't overpay you like they did those guys.
Yeah, those guys made tons of money from that. Yeah.
Tons, right? Imagine, bro, like you're on one show and that's like, there's no other job like that. Like if you were a plumber and that steak is still working, they ain't staying you no money.
No. So, Rodrigo, you guys became tight, obviously, because he is your co-host, and he's also your opener too. Like he'll go on tour with you.
Yes, opener, merch, and he pretty much knows everything about that scene. You know, the punk rock scene. He's been to a lot of shows.
Do you remember when he brought up Voodoo Gold Schools first time, or what your like initial impression of it was?
I think when we bought our first bong. When I bought my first bong ever.
Yeah.
We went to we met Jerry and we met a couple of guys from another band. They were a local punk band that they were signed with Voodoo under their label, and they used to open for them, but I forgot their names already. We went to their house first. There's a bunch of dudes living there, and then we went to Jerry's house and Eddie's house, and that's when we met the whole band.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me every album on CD.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I had the shirts too. They got like a lot of stuff, merch. Big fans from the get-go, man. Cuz I always liked ska since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know, like I didn't go to too many concerts cuz I was broke and my dad was not into that shit. So we had to watch soccer. When?
What was your early experience with ska?
Oh man, Madness.
Mm-hmm.
All my little brothers, when that video showed up, because we never watched music videos, so we didn't have cable, so we used to watch Video 21 on Channel 22, and they would play continuous videos, and we loved Madness. And but my favorite band of all time was The Specials, because I read their book, the book. I know they came out with The Specials book. I don't know if you remember it. Yeah, it was a story. The thing was an autobiography about The Specials, and I read the whole book. I read it like 10 years ago. I didn't know that, man. The hardest part about being in that band was carrying that fucking keyboard.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Yeah.
Oh, man. Let me tell you, man. Their trombone player, Mr. Rico, blow. He'd have an attitude carrying that keyboard up those stairs, bro, because he had the lightest equipment of the band, so he had to help carry that keyboard. I think that's what there was sarcasm. Mr. Rico, blow! Carry that keyboard!
Did you ever hear the Spanish version of One Step Beyond by Madness, Un Paso Adelante? Deja todo
y fíjate en esto, el sonido más marchoso y vacilón que existe actualmente. Si vas por la calle, el cuerpo te pide en marcha, no te escapes, escúchalo y vuélvete loco al ritmo del rock cañero de Madness. ¡Un paso adelante!
So they re-recorded the song in Italian and Spanish. And then I think it was kind of a big hit in Mexico in the 80s because it would play it in like, it would play it like outside like discos and like dance parties and stuff.
No, I've never heard it in Spanish. I've only heard that song by Beck in Spanish, Jackass, with mariachis. I think that album was released in Europe only, and then somehow made it over here.
That was, which album was that? That was
Orale Way. Orale.
Yeah. I used to be a complete Beck fanatic. I would like collect B-sides and like early recordings and stuff, but I kind of, yeah. I used to have all that shit, yeah.
I saw Beck at the K-Rock Weenie Roast the first time I went there, and that's when I saw Sublime, Green Day, Stone Temple Pilots, Henry Rollins Band, Frente, Afghan Whigs, all in one concert, and the Ramones.
Nice.
I think that's the band I've seen three times with the Ramones.
That's sick.
But I remember we hung out with another band from Texas. I don't know if you heard of them. It's called the Scarnales.
Yeah, I know the Scarnales.
Yeah.
What's up, Scarnal?
Yeah. Shout out, Scarnales.
Scarnal! Oh, yeah, you could drink, too.
Oh, yeah?
Matt, there's a band. There's a comedian out of Tucson, Arizona, or Phoenix now. He's a big, fat, native guy. I can't think of his name right now, but that guy... Him and I got into him and I hit it off because he likes ska, the native guy, and he was in a native ska band. I wish I had an album, a cassette, bro, a CD. He gave me a CD, but it was a Rez ska band, man.
Yeah, there's been a pretty cool like punk and ska scenes in like the Rez in the Arizona and New Mexico over the years.
You seen them? You checked them out? Like you followed them?
Adam used to play in a band called Link 80, and they played in Tuba.
Tuba City, Arizona. Yeah,
Tuba City, Arizona, at this place called Crack Shack, and it was just a straight up abandoned house with like one functioning light bulb, and they would throw like punk and ska shows there, and it was like unhinged. Just it's like some of his favorite shows he's ever played.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
Your first exposure to ska was hearing Madness on MTV?
Yes. We were watching it with my family. One Step Beyond. Yeah. I went to go see English Beat.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I was doing a show. I was, I went to Europe for my birthday. I had a show in Rotterdam. So it was a one-nighter in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. But the next day I went to go see the English Beat. And in England, they were going to perform at a little small bar. But I didn't know, like, the time-wise. I thought they were going to perform at 9, but that was the time the show started. And they were going to not go up till later on at night. I said, fuck that. I left.
Yeah.
But I got to see their two openers. They were good. But
who were the openers?
I made up for it. Oh, man, I forgot their name, but they're from America, I think. I wish I knew their names. But I went to go see them in Santa Barbara, New Year's Eve, 2 years ago. They were at the Santa Barbara Community Center. And, man, they were kicking ass, dude. I recognized a lot of those songs.
So you met Voodoo at the Uptown, I believe, in Oakland. It's like, I want to say 2010, 2009. Do you remember that show?
2008, yeah, man. I was fucked up. I was loaded, bro, making everybody laugh.
What do you remember about that night?
Oh, man, that Rodrigo wasn't there, but we got tickets to go see them. And It was like two of my friends, two other comedians that were friends of mine. And we got there right before they did their last three songs. And then we hung out with them till they were packing. And when they were packing, I was roasting somebody there real hard, and everybody was laughing. But they were packing all their gear. And we got to smoke with them. So I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was like fanboying the whole time, though.
Yeah. Eddie said that he remembers that show that you hopped on stage during Charlie Brown and started singing.
Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown, we the clown. It's Charlie Brown, we gonna get drunk. This is what it says.
Everybody always picking on me.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, man. Oh, man, that was in, dude, that happened out of nowhere. My friend Gene Pompa, he's the, he loves ska too, and he always wears a hat. Like he wears like the little tiny ska hat, and he wears a suit with boots on, with punk rock boots on, and that's how I met him. But he always looks like he's about to play a saxophone or something. That's the way he dresses. And he was gonna host a show at the Microsoft, which is the Microsoft now, and they needed a band out of nowhere. I was already on the show, okay, so. 2 days before the show starts, I call Rodrigo, hey, bro, they need a band. Ask Voodoo Glow Skulls and they want to perform at a live taping and they'll get paid to perform live and they'll get to be on stage the whole night, like Johnny Carson's Jay Leno band or like a Tonight Show band. So they never done that before, you know? And they came in and I don't know if they were wearing dress suits, but they were looking sharp. And man, they killed, man, they killed. And when they went to sing Charlie Brown, my wife and I went on stage and I started singing Charlie Brown with them. It was badass. I was on 2 days of no sleep.
Did that show never aired though, right?
Never aired, and my friend never got the tapes from the guy that they got to an argument, I guess. Because my friend was supposed to host the show, bring up five comics, me, and then after the five comics, he did a whole hour on stage, and Voodoo Glow School brought him up with the music. They got off, Voodoo gets off stage, and he does a whole hour on stage. And they paid for everything. They had a big production. They had money, man. They had money. But I don't know what happened to the tape.
That's right. Yeah, they... Too bad it never aired. I mean, Voodoo Glow Skulls as a house band, yeah.
Voodoo Glow Skulls, the house band, they would have murdered it. Yeah, but Eddie always goes to my shows when I'm at the Ontario Improv.
Mm-hmm.
I also meet fans of ska and punk who walk up to me and goes, man, that's good you got Voodoo Glow Skulls to do that song. A big mm-hmm. fan.
Yeah, so originally the song you're using as a theme song, you did that for your first special, right?
Yes.
They're not going to laugh at you, I think. That's what it's called, right?
They're not going to laugh at you. I forgot about that. Yeah, they did it for the special, and then we did it for the podcast.
Yeah. Is it the same recording?
No, a different recording, I think. Different recording.
Oh, okay. Do you remember like what your thought was at the time? You're like, I'm doing this special. I want to get Voodoo to like rearrange their song for it. Like, do you remember what you were thinking at the time?
Oh man, everything happened so fast. My first special, because I was in Washington D.C. I was doing a show, and into the Lincoln Center has a bunch of different rooms besides the main room. So I was doing a smaller room at the Lincoln Center with a bunch of comedians. It was like an annual charity event where they get like five comics, a band, and we perform live, and all the money goes to get scholarships for kids who are going to get into government.
Mm-hmm.
So any kid from America that wants to get into government, there's a, this organizations, they groom them and give them a path to get to their destination, like get them in the right college to meet the right people to get into, pick a party, I guess. Most of the kids end up being lawyers, but this. Our comedy show helps pay for the at least some of the way there. So I'm hanging out with Alex Raimundo. He's one of the Latin kings of comedy. And he's talking to Tater Salad on the phone. What's his name, Tater Salad? Ron White.
And, yeah.
He hangs out with him, and I tell him that I want to do a comedy special. He goes, "You want to do a comedy special?" I go, "Yeah, okay. Let's see if I can make that happen." So he calls up his manager, and his manager produces specials. A week later, I get a phone call, and they tell me that I have a week to get ready to do my one-hour special.
Wow.
Usually they give you like 6 months, a year to get ready, but I only had a week. But it's okay because I've been doing those jokes for the last 15 years. I already have memorized them, you know, front and back. I didn't even have to write down a set list. So I had to do like an hour and 20 so they could cut it down to an hour. And there were three specials being taped that day. One comic, and then Bobcat Goldwaite was performing right before my show. So I gave away free tickets, bro, for my show, and we packed it out. And then like some of the people ended up going to all the three specials, Bobcat Goldwaite and the other one. So they got to see three specials. So then we shot the special, they were cutting it and editing, and they told us to get a song. And I said, you know what? Ask Voodoo Glosco if they want to do it. So they gave him a budget and they said, all right. Because I figured, you know, I'm not going to get Madness, you know, or anybody. So I just wanted a ska song because I like ska. And I said, and I want people like who never heard of my comedy to hear the song and go, hell yeah. Or be like, Leonardo DiCaprio and that movie when he goes, ah.
Yeah, pointing at the screen.
The meme, yeah.
Pointing at the screen, man. Like, I know the song.
Yeah, that's sick. I remember when I saw...
And a lot of people got to hear it all over the world, so it helped the band, too.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
This is an announcement to all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all. With a struggling economy and the cost of living on the rise, Endurance is now offering an affordable, low-cost vehicle coverage plan to the general public. As of today, you could be one of millions of drivers that now may qualify to have your vehicle protected under this coverage and have all future covered auto repairs paid directly to the repair shop for you. You pick your plan, you pick your deductible, you even pick the repair shop. Roadside service, towing, and rental coverage is included. To all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire, get your vehicle protected now and save your wallet from costly vehicle repairs. For your free 5-minute quote and to see if you qualify, visit endurancewarranty.com. Endurancewarranty.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
So your special was just like a year or two after you won Last Comic Standing, right?
A year after, yes.
A year, which I guess you probably were getting a lot of momentum at that point, right?
Yes.
Then you did the podcast. The podcast was a few years later that you started it?
Yes, it was started in 2012 or 14. I don't remember.
Okay, yeah. Was that an immediate decision to say, like, we're going to use that voodoo song, or we're going to redid it a little bit?
I don't know. We wanted to do the song because he was saying, "What's up, fool?" And we call a podcast, "What's Up, Fool Podcast."
Yeah. Hey, works.
Yeah, man, and he's big, fat, ugly, and mean.
Yeah. I know you had Jerry on the podcast, Jerry O'Neill, the original drummer of the band. But did you recorded an episode with other Voodoo members that never aired?
Yeah, man. They were getting ready to go on a big European tour. And I showed up. This is before I had a podcast studio. I just had a little recorder and a microphone. And they didn't record real well because they were, like, busy. They were packing their clothes and getting ready to go to a show. And they probably were not getting along either, so I don't know.
All right, yeah. So, but yeah, I watched the Jerry one. The Jerry one's it was really good. I think he wasn't in the band anymore, but he'd been in the band only a few years, I think, at that point that he wasn't in the band, and he was a cab driver. I don't know if he's still a cab driver, but at the time he was a cab driver.
You know, have you seen his cab?
I have not seen his cab, no.
Right there on he had like a yellow cab. And right there on the side of the yellow cab right there by the tire, he goes, "Taking you one step and beyond."
Nice.
Yeah, well, or maybe he wrote "Driving you one step and beyond," but he wrote the madness line right there on the side of the car.
What other ska bands are you a fan of? Or are you aware of?
Rancid. I like the Scandalites. Because I'm a big fan of. Because one time, man, we were driving through on the 46. We were leaving Santa Maria. That's right. We left Santa Maria after our show. And then we were in a van. And most of the people that were in that van opened for Gabriel Iglesias, but they were not opening for him at the time. It was Martín Moreno, Ivan, Rodrigo Torres, Armando Cosillo, and Ruben Quintana. And Ruben Quintana, that fool had a Specials Greatest Hits CD. And I never heard the Greatest Hits. And this is the 2002 or 2001, we were listening to it. He put it in there, man. And my friend had he was wearing a black trench coat at the time. A black trench coat. I had a black leather jacket. And I remember we played that thing like three times, man, on our trip.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard that song, "Guns of Navarone." I love that song, man. We heard it over and over, and then later on, we found out that it was on a Scandalites. So we started listening to the Scandalites, man. Fabuloso Cadillacs, you heard of them?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, man, my first TV special in 1996, they were there. They were one of the bands.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, really?
What was that like? Did you get to meet them?
Yeah, I got to meet them briefly, man. And you know what's funny? And this is what I liked was that I liked them right away. But they didn't fit in, you know, like at the festival, because they're all about Tejano, Tex-Mex music, right? And Selena was still alive back then, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that type of music was very popular, you know, back then. But here comes Fabuloso Cadillacs, bro. And they were like new to San Antonio, I guess. Now they're big, but not that many people knew who they were. But I was super excited once I heard of it.
Yeah. They are a fantastic band. And I think like really have become one of the biggest bands out of South America at this point.
Yes. Also, man, I watched hanging out with Voodoo, and I learned about that big concert that Voodoo used to get invited to, the one that Marky Ramon does in Peru somewhere. Mm. Have you been to that one?
I don't know that one.
I think it's a big punk concert, man, either in Peru or Brazil, but it's huge. Marky Ramon will do it. And Buddha will go though. It's like a huge, and then like there's this big ska band from South America that I like. Interpol, right? No.
No, Interpol's a band from England, I think.
Yeah, but there's a band out of Peru that like, I wish I knew their names, but they rock too, man, in Spanish.
Nice. So did you ever get to see the Scottalites play?
I wish.
You know, they toured quite a bit. They toured quite a bit with even the original members in the 90s. But they still play, but it's like, you know, it's no original members, I don't think, or maybe one. But it's still a good show. You know, they're all like guys that came up with and kind of were schooled in the ways of the Scottalites. So they still like put on a good show.
Aaron, quick little aside, Interpol's from Manhattan, New York.
Manhattan, New York, all right. Interpol.
Okay.
Not England.
Not England. This is, no letters, please.
Hey, when No Doubt came around with their music, they were like the fourth wave or third wave of ska.
Yeah, the third wave.
They played ska like in the 80s. Yeah.
Third wave.
Yeah, they played ska in the 80s, and then when they sort of became like a big band, they were kind of moving away from ska. But in the 80s, they were playing straight up like two-tone inspired ska.
I heard that Voodoo, they need to open up for Voodoo.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I used to also like the Aquabats, I think.
Yeah.
I had a girlfriend that had all their CDs. I was like, what the fuck? And I started listening to it.
Have they invited you to be on Yo Gabba Gabba yet?
Not even once.
if you're listening, get Felipe on Yo Gabba Gabba.
What was the first concert you guys went to? Because I used to go. I saw what's his name, a big fan of mine now, the lead singer of Suicidal Tendencies.
That was your first show with Suicidal Tendencies?
Yeah, man. No, I went to go see. We used to go see punk bands at the. At this recreation center, man, in South Central. Mm-hmm. And they used to have punk bands there. We used to see a band called Excel from Venice Beach.
My first show was Living Color in San Jose, at the San Jose Civic Center, which I think you just played, actually.
Wow. Yeah, I got to see the Mighty Mighty Boston's in 96 at some concert, and I took a picture with a lead singer. And I have a collective poster, concert poster, of the band of the Mighty Mighty Boston's. So whenever I would see a flyer or anything, I would grab it. But I have a cool one, man. It has Mighty Mighty Boston's performing with Butthole Surfers, and then another band, a smaller band in the bottom.
Did you stage dive at that show?
No, bro, too fat.
Always.
As far as stage dive for me, man, I would be in the pit, but nah, man, too big. Nobody want to lift me up, bro.
Yeah, me too. I'm too big to stage dive too.
I always wanted to, man. And sometimes comics, at some shows I do, they stage dive, and people are crawling or carrying them. But I don't think it's gonna happen to me, man. I feel they're gonna pickpocket me or tickle me or something.
Or tickle you? Are you ticklish?
Fuck yeah. I'm gonna, only if you surprise me, I'm ticklish. But if I know it's coming, I'm not ticklish.
Yeah, same. My kids always try to tickle me. Doesn't work. But if they catch me when I'm not paying attention, then they get me.
Oh, they got me. Oh, stop it.
Did you go to a lot of punk shows back in the day?
I went to local punk shows in my neighborhood in Boyle Heights. There would be a punk show every Friday. They call it the Sheridan Elementary, but it was right across the street from Sheridan Elementary. I went to that school in kindergarten. So they had a big backyard, bro, and they would local punk band would perform there. Man, that's the only time I saw white people in that neighborhood. Like they would come from Burbank, from all over the valley, and when we were kids, we used to, everybody had a tape recorder, and they would record the whole concert on their tape recorder, 90 minutes, and then flip it, and they would write down the band on the back of the tape and the date on it. And if you knew the songs, you would write down the songs on it. But then you would make a list of that concert, like, okay, this happened in 1992. I saw Resistant Militia, Armored Saint, and Yalo, right, together. And you would put out that list to another person, like from Detroit, and that dude would send you a list of the concert he saw that weekend. And then you would, this is all before the internet, and you would mark which bands you like, and then that person will send you back a cassette of those two bands you picked up on the concert that he saw. And then I will send him concerts that I recorded on my tape recorder and blah, blah, blah. And that's how we would tape trade punk shows.
Nice.
I had a friend named Ismael Garcia, rest in peace. That guy had at least five or six vans, shoe boxes full of cassettes, bro, like both sides all the way to the back of all his punk concert that he's seen or traded with people from other parts of the country. That's how we got to listen to a lot of the Beastie Boys when they were doing punk. A lot of their stuff. Agnostic Front, you know, all that shit.
Yeah, the early stuff, yeah. Did you ever see ska bands at any of those like backyard Boyle Heights shows?
No, there was a show, it was like a backyard show with backyard bands in Santa Monica on the pier. And I hosted it, and there was a bunch of ska bands from East Los Angeles. Some of them don't even exist. One of them was called East LA Blues Experiment. Yes, bro, and these guys were ska. They had they had percussions, bro. They had trumpets, they had saxophone. They had a drummer, and they had two guitarists. They had a big band, and they were getting popular for a while. And they had a following because everybody came there to see them. I don't know what happened to them. But I remember that me and Gabriel Iglesias, we hosted a all-night Day of the Dead punk fest in East Los Angeles. And there were so many ska bands, young kids, bro, rocking it out.
Yeah, it's a big scene there.
It's always the dark-looking Mexicans in ska, though.
You should check out.
You go to a ska concert, everybody looks like me, bro. Like Oaxaca or literally just climb up a pyramid. Hey, ska, it ain't for hot-looking chicks, hey. I don't care what you say, bro. That's why there's no, like, ska groupies, bro.
Yeah.
And if she is, tell them Large Marge sent you.
Yeah, have you ever heard Steady 45s? You might, if you haven't heard them, you dig them. They're like East LA ska band, all traditional, like in the vein of like, you know, early Jamaican ska stuff. Like flawless, just perfect, like old ska grooves.
Oh man, you want to hear something funny? There's another way I got into ska too, man. I had bought a 1979. I just came out of rehab and I had $500, and I bought a car for $400, a 1978 Montero. No, I don't know what it was. Ford Granada, bro. Four doors. Mm-hmm. Ford Granada. My baby mama, she used to work at Galpin Ford or Galpin. Yeah, Galpin Ford. And they had used cars. So somebody brought in a used car, the trade-in. So they said, well, ask me, give us $500. So I said, I'm trying to clean it up for me and paint it. So they painted it, bro. It was dark gray. and they gave it to me like that, $500, no questions asked. Bro, there was a cassette stuck in the car forever. Couldn't take it out. It just played forward, and then it played the other side, bro, all day long. I couldn't take it out. So, bro, I got to hear Louie. It would play that song, bro, by, oh, man. Oh, man. Play a little guitar. What's the name of that band? Now, play that guitar real time. Give me a little jazz thing. Oh, what's the name of that song? It's a ska band, bro, from Jamaica. They still around, too. I think one of the singers just died. Oh, man. The Montags? The Montags or something like that? You know, I know you gotta know these guys. Come on, man. Don't let me down. Here it is. It's Toots and the Maytals.
Oh, Toots and the Maytals, of course, yeah.
Toots and the Maytals. Well, that fucking cassette was stuck in my car.
It's not a bad cassette to have stuck in your car. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro, it will play over and over. I memorized every song. Car 54, where are you? You know, and everything, bro. That's part of my favorite band. Because I was forced to hear it. And I remember bringing a girl in the car. He goes, you have any other songs? He goes, I would have to get another car. So I can listen to it all day long, man.
Nice.
Louie. That's ska too, right? First wave or second?
That's like kind of first wave, right?
Well, it's first wave. I think it's a little bit more reggae. Yeah.
You're a little bit more reggae.
Like rock steady. Like kind of rock steady reggae. Yeah.
Rock steady. Damn, you good, bro. Rock steady. Because I wouldn't want to do that one. Because I have like a podcast called History for Fools.
Yeah.
So if I ever do ska, I got to remember that it started off with reggae, then rocksteady, right?
No, it goes ska, rocksteady, reggae, and then...
No
then,
way!
And then it's ska revival two-tone kind of came back.
Ska revival two-tones.
Yeah.
So ska, reggae?
No, ska, rocksteady, then reggae. It kind of goes a little slower, and then it's like... Early reggae is like kind of faster. Then it goes to that sort of roots reggae, which is sort of the most popular version of reggae, where it's really slow.
Mm. So that means that Bob Marley's first band, the Wailers, they were ska.
Yeah, ska. Yeah, yeah. Simmer Down. That was like their big hit when they were ska band. Yeah.
I also like that song by I've heard ska all over my life. In mm-hmm. movies,
mm-hmm.
not knowing there was ska song, but they became like my favorite song of the whole movie, and the only reason I watched the movie over and over, because I know that in that movie Drugstore Cowboy, there's a ska song in that song, but I don't think now you're talking about it might be a rock steady song. It's called oh man, the Israelites.
Desmond Dekker, yeah. That song's
Desmond Dekker.
Get up in the morning, slay paper bread, sir, so that every mouth can be paid.
Oh, Israelite. Wake up in the morning, late for breakfast. Somebody told me.
Oh, those are the exact lyrics.
The Israelite.
I mean, if you're going back to 60s Jamaican ska, rocksteady, early reggae. It's a small difference of speed and groove. It's not super different from one another. It's not till 70s reggae that it gets really slow that I think that it really takes a pretty significant change from it. But I mean, yeah, you could hear like the Israelites, and it's not like that different from like early Scottalites.
Scottalites, man. You ever seen them live?
Yeah, I saw them in the 90s, and it was amazing. And then I saw them like 4 or 5 years ago when it was basically, I think the drummer was it might have been the drummer was still in the band, but and it was all like young kids. But they were awesome still, yeah. But in the 90s, it was pretty much everyone who's still alive that was in the band. And they were legends. But, you know, they never got to tour the States in the 60s, I don't think, or very little. So when they came back in the 90s, it was like everyone who fell in love with ska and like knew those records got to like actually see them live.
Ska got a big revival in Mexico, huh?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, huge. It's probably the biggest place for ska is Mexico City.
Yes, I saw this big ska party, and then the guys were like the biggest ska dance they had over there.
Yeah, do you know like Panteon Rococo?
Yeah.
Huge. They're huge. Those guys headlined an amphitheater with like, I don't know, 50,000 people or something. Those guys are huge. This is in Mexico City.
That's a lot of people for ska, man.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's not like that here.
No, man. You get there, man. It's a tech guy dancing with you. Louie. Can I believe that car was, that cassette was stuck in there forever, bro. I sold that car with the cassette in it.
So you passed it on to the next person.
Yeah. I sold it. Listen, bro, before you get this car, you gotta like ska, bro. And this car will take you like one step and beyond, just like Jerry's back.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever. All right, there's our conversation with Felipe. But, Aaron, if they want to hear more of this conversation, what should they do? How should they do it?
Well, there's a little thing called Patreon in defense of ska, and they can go right to it, and they can sign up to it, and they can give anywhere from $5 to $5,000.
Wow.
Or you actually can go higher than $5,000.
What?
Yeah, you can actually go $5 million. I think that's the limit. $5 million.
Is that really the limit? I think we need somebody to test that.
Yeah, what's the limit?
Please test the limit of how much you can sign up to the Patreon for. We'll make it worth your while.
Yeah, and what we'll do is we'll let you listen to the rest of this episode with Felipe Esparza.
Yeah, and other stuff that Aaron will figure out.
I'll do a private dance for you, but it will
be private dance,
non-erotic.
Dance, a little bit erotic, though.
A little bit, yeah.